Good afternoon, brethren. Aloha. How many of you are in Puerto Rico for the feast? I'm kidding. How many of you were in Hawaii? Yeah. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on where we went. Yes, I will. No, I won't. And when we came back, it's always nice to go to a feast site, as many of you did, where many of the places you go to, you see other church members. It's really a good feeling. And we went to the Big Island, which we'd never been to before. So it was a lot of fun, and I'm sure we're all... Mr. Weber hasn't said yay or nay on this. How many of you would like to have a Sabbath where we do bring all our feast pictures and maybe put them up on a screen? Yeah, good. I was going to suggest it anyway, but now I've got support of it. It doesn't look good. Mr. Weber will say, hey, they all agreed. So how was your feast? It was good? Yeah, it was good. Good. I've heard people say many times in the past in the church, even if I didn't believe in the Feast of Tabernacles and their observing, I think from a psychological, sociological perspective, I'd keep them anyway. They're that enjoyable. They have the theological underpinnings, but they also have some wonderful, wonderful psychological, sociological of getting together. Let me get the questions about my hand. This went during the feast, and I'll explain what happened to my hand. There was this burning building next to where we live, and there were three small children in it, and Becky's shaking her head. That's a lie. That was a lie. There was this cardboard box on fire, and there's these three little kittens in it, and I told these excuses at Hawaii. It didn't work there either. I set fire to my hand trying to put my fire pit together the day before the Day of Atonement. What, 3 weeks ago now, right? Yeah, Becky's nodding. 3 weeks ago. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Mine, we're so glad to see Leanne here, but whose was far different and worse. We're so pleased to see her. So I told her, I have no sympathy for you. I have empathy. Mine was minor, though God was good to me. And no, I don't want any more detail than that. Spoke to Mr. Weber. He is in Redlands today and wishes you all a very happy Sabbath. I noticed that when the film was going on, how many of you have ever been to New Zealand? Yeah, a few of you. Becky and I did on a business trip in the Overjet. How many of you have been on an Overjet? That's the jet down the river. It is in a shallow, shallow part of the river. The walls are extremely narrow, right? And you can always find out on those things who the Catholics are, right? Because they're always, this is how we're going to work. It is unbelievable. But we experienced some of the same things. We didn't go down for the feast, as I say. So your feast was good, so was ours. It was wonderful. Beautiful place Hawaii is. But I have a phrase for you that I learned from a very good Polynesian friend. He was a big guy. I mean, it's almost redundant. You say Polynesian guy. Big guy. And he said to me once, Mono hopono no malaka kena. I said, what does that mean? He said, mainlanders taste good. Becky's saying, no, mainlanders have good taste. So in the context of the feast, what I'm going to do, just as Dr. Hoover, I think we're both on the same wavelength, and Mr. Grinnell, I'm going to take you back to the feast. Because this is after the feast. But there's some aspects of it that we need to understand, I think. And it's going to be, unfortunately, it's going to be somewhat along the same lines, though not exactly the same. You poor people that were in Hawaii, you're going to hear quite a few elements of the message I gave at the Feast of Tabernacles. But it's going to be in a different perspective, and some taken out and some points expanded upon. So I'm going to drag you back to the feast. I'm going to drag you back into the world we live in right now. And then I'm going to leave you, hopefully, thinking of the future. As Mr. Grinnell said, Leviticus chapter 23, I was hoping he was going to read the whole thing. So let's turn to it very quickly. You know it very, very well. I think this is an important part of the Feast of Tabernacles that we often sometimes forget. I'm going to pick up where he left off. The second part of verse 42. All you who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths. Verse 43. That your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the eternal, your God. And so one of the foundational aspects of the Feast of Tabernacles, which I always try and remind myself, so very, very important during the Feast of Tabernacles, it parallels as a historical event the Israelites who wandered in the desert for 40 years in tents, portable tents. And so in the context of the feast and post-feast, I'd like to take you into a present element of the Feast of Tabernacles, the past, which we've just read, and then the future. So Leviticus 23 states exactly that, the past. The present we will discuss. The future, I need a reference. If you'd all turn to the book of Hebrews. In my message in Hawaii, I was not able to develop it to the extent I want to develop it with you. Three simple verses are what I used. And I'd read these verses as you have so many, many times over the years. And as many speakers will tell you, I've read this before, I understand what it says, but I've read it again and again and again, and now I see it a little differently. Not completely differently, but deeper, potentially. See if you agree with me. Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going, and by faith he dwelt in the land of promises in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. This is a complex book. We really don't know who the author is. I don't think it was Paul. It doesn't really matter who the author was, does it? It's what's inside it. Irrespective of anything we read, it's what does it say? What was it in its intent? So as complex as it is, primarily we understand it as being the book of Hebrews is about Jesus Christ as the high priest. And it says these comments in verses 8, 9, and 10, prior to what we just read, about a specific day, which you all observed. But there's even more than that. It has more to do, I believe, with the days we celebrate. And in Hebrews, I have researched this and researched this and researched this. And there's very rare an understanding. And it's mainly because the Protestant, or let's just say non-Jewish, commentators don't observe the things we do. The Jews don't believe this book was inspired. So we're kind of left on our own, aren't we? So I'm going to give you some gleanings of a little study I've done. When it talks about Christ as the high priest in the prior chapters, and it's very important, it moves again into this chapter and speaks of something not yet obtained. It's in process. There's a goal. There's three main elements I can see in the verses I'm going to speak to you about. And again, it's past, present, and future. It speaks to a journey we are all on together, collectively. Together on this journey. Number two, it speaks, because this is the faith chapter, chapter 11, it does speak about faith. It also speaks very heavily, very poignantly, and those of us that keep the holy days, we are the only ones that will truly understand what these verses are talking about. It talks about the objective or the ultimate goal. So if you want an SPS and a title, we're all on a journey. Hebrews spends the majority of its chapters on three subjects: Christ as high priest, where he leads us, and going, not knowing. Verse 8 talks about faith. Again, this is the faith chapter. That Abraham obeyed to go to a place, it says, obeyed when he was called to go to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. He's going to a place of inheritance, and this refers to Genesis chapter 12, when God sent Abraham and Sarah and the people with them from Haran to Canaan. Canaan is always known as the land of promise. It's the promised land. That's Canaan. What the aspect of this is so important, you need to understand it's an inheritance. And because I'm a financial advisor, I deal sometimes with peoples and their inheritances. A lot of times it's an expected inheritance. And, is it or isn't? Well, my mom has to die first. I said, okay, got it. All right. But an inheritance is usually something that your parents give you after they passed away. When both of my parents are gone, they weren't rich, either one of them. They were divorced at the time They died, and they left me and my sis and our family some few things. It's not a lot, but they're very, very special to me. When I look at them, I understand it's part of my inheritance. Something promised or left by someone who loved you for someone they love very, very much. And so they're very special to me. So this is an inheritance that God gives to Abraham. And the context and the words used are very, very important. And you're supposed to understand that. Those of us that have lost parents or loved ones and have been given something, small or great, it doesn't matter. The word inheritance means a lot to you. This is what they left me, what they promised me. And indeed, God gave Abraham this promise, the land of promise. So this is important, but note, he went without knowledge of where he was going. This is so critical to this entire chapter. It says going without knowing. It means if Sarah did ask him, honey, where are we going? Well, I really don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Haven't you Googled this? Well, no, I haven't. So you have no idea where we're going, what it's like, what are the hotels like, right? What kind of attractions? Is it like New Zealand where the Grinnells went? I really don't know. I've never been there. God says it's where we're supposed to go. And that's exactly what they did. The Greek is very clear. It doesn't say he was ignorant. It doesn't say he was ignorant. It says he just didn't have the full picture. How could he? He didn't know. And that's what the book of Hebrews says. He went by faith. Remember, there is no verse breaks. There is no verse 9. He went out not knowing where he was going, and he did so by faith. That's why we call it the faith chapters, because the word is used over and over and over again. And so he leaves. But one of the things that they did know is that God was leading them, and that God had indeed led him all his life. I've always struck every week. We were in meetings for 2 days at work. And every time there was a break, any kind of a break, you know, bathroom break or rest break, what did people do? The first thing, as soon as the presentation was over, what did they do? Yeah, Mr. Fish is right. He holds up his phone. They get on their phones. It doesn't matter what age they are, right? They had old people there, right? And they had younger people there. Everybody got on their phone like we've missed something. Something's happened so important, or because we're so important, we got a text. We have to answer it, don't we? We demand to know in this generation, this culture. This culture demands to know. And I think, to be honest with you, brethren, it's a little bit odd. It's a little bit scary. Unfortunately, I'm no different than you are. I have a smartphone. We have smart TVs. At our house, Becky and I and all our kids have tablets. I have 2 tablets. That's how crazy I am. One's not enough for some reason. I cracked the screen on one. Anyway, we have all this technology. And it's almost like a drug. I said this to one person recently. Your phone is a drug. Your tablet is a drug. No, it's not. No, it's not. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. People are killed by other people texting and on their smartphone and on their tablet. All this knowledge and all this demand to know hasn't increased or lessened the divorces. It doesn't make people communicate any better. And I'm not anti-technology. I'm anti-stupid. I'm anti-crazy. I'm anti-dependent. And I'm dependent at 2. And so, but when we look at Abraham, he had nothing, absolutely nothing. No TripAdvisor, he had no map. Cartography was hardly a science in that day. And it says very clearly he didn't know where he was going. It's not to be translated stupid Abraham. It's to be translated what? Faithful Abraham. Abraham, the father of the faithful. It's a very important verse. He sought something that God had promised him. But it goes on and we read even deeper. Verse 9, he dwelt in the land of promise by God as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. And you'll hear this word if you want to do a good study, a word study. Look up two words in the book of Hebrews among all the others. And there are many others that are very important. But key words, promise and city. Promise and city. These two key concepts in the book of Hebrews are important. Now, some people say the promise, thinking back to the book of Acts, they await for the promise from on high, and the promise must be God's Holy Spirit. No, that's assumed. Let me shock you. I believe the patriarchs of the Old Testament had God's Spirit. I believe the Israelites had God's Spirit, and I can prove it easily. But you have to have faith with it and understanding with it. You have to be able to use it. And Abraham is emblematic. Does anybody here believe that Abraham and Sarah did not have God's Spirit? Look at the people in the book of Hebrews under the faith chapter. These are people of faith who had not 1/50th of the information we have. They were highly dependent upon God. Let's keep reading. Verse 11. Completing verse 10. He waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him, and your Bible is probably capitalized, God, him faithful who had promised. God's the promiser. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead. Why is that good as dead? How old was Abraham when he had a kid? Ay, 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 ay. Ay, 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 ay. 100 years old. He was good as dead. Sarah was as good as dead. Right? How old was Sarah? 39, correct. Both of them are as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the sea. And yet, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them from afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims. The context of these verses says, even though they were in the land of promise in Canaan, they still consider themselves resident aliens. We really don't belong here. We love it here. It's wonderful. It's much like where you were at the feast. Hawaii was beautiful. How could Hawaii not be beautiful? By the way, there was over 500 people there, almost 600 in some days. How could it not be beautiful? That's not home to me. It's not home. New Zealand wasn't home for the Grinnells. By the way, I know where Mr. Fish went. It's not home. We want to be home, don't we? As nice as the feast is, about the sixth or seventh day, I don't know about y'all, but I got to tell you, this beautiful place we're in, I want my own bed. I want my own pillow, right? I want air that I can see and cut with a knife. No, it's not that bad anymore. It ain't home. And just as that is, Abraham and Sarah and the rest of the patriarchs, they died not having received the promise because they understood that they were strangers. They were pilgrims. They were resident aliens on the earth. Verse 14, for those who say such things declare plainly, they seek what? A homeland. And Abraham and Sarah said, this isn't home. Promised by God, an inheritance from God, this isn't home. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. Let's go back. Let's go back to Haran. If they had called it to mind. Hebrews says they didn't. They could have gone back. They would have had opportunity to return, but they now desire a better, that is, heavenly country or place. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Is this talking about going to heaven? Absolutely not. It's talking about dead people. Abraham and Sarah are dead. Are they? Aren't they? So if the book of Hebrews was talking about dying and going to heaven, we got a problem here. It says they haven't received the promise. It therefore cannot be heaven. But it says it is an adverb of heavenly. We're going to see where. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. There's that word again. And it's over and over and over throughout the book of Hebrews. He has promised a city to them. We move from chapter 11 to chapter 12. He begins, the writer of Hebrews does, I want you to, as I read this, it continues this theme. I want you to remember you just got done keeping the feast in eighth day. In that context of what occurs during the feast in eighth day, listen to these verses. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily besets us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Where is it talking about? It's talking about Christ enthroned in heaven, where he sits today for now. And so it continues this theme of Christ on his throne with God in heaven. But there's more. In chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, it pictures this heavenly situation. We move still in chapter 12, getting closer to the end of the book, all the way down, if you follow me, to verse 22. And you can read the intervening verses because there's more, but these are the high points. But you have come, he says, not to, as it talks about the mountain that cannot be touched at Sinai. He says, verse 22, you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, who are registered in heaven. What again is this picturing? It's picturing one and only event and time period, and which we observe. If you do not keep the Feast of Tabernacles in the eighth day, you will have no clue what this means. And says it talks about the firstborn who are registered in heaven. Registered where? In what? What are they registered in? Book of Life. The only book that matters. If you aren't in the Book of Life, you aren't. Registered in heaven, the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator, hearkening back to chapters 7, 8, and 9. To Jesus, the mediator, the high priest of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than of Abel. He continues, see that you do not refuse him who speaks, for if they did not escape who refused him who spoke on earth, much more shall we not escape if we turn away from him who speaks now from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth. Now, as we read this, he's talking about, again, a specific event. And I want you to think about it in a holy day context. He says, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he has promised, saying, yet once more I shall not only shake the earth, but also heaven. This is the future. Now this, yet once more, indicates the removal of those things that are being shaken, as of things that are made, that the things which cannot be shaken may return. Eternal things, heavenly things, things that God builds. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For God is a consuming fire. God is our refuge, which was the song that was sang. If you read that psalm again, or that hymn again, as I know Dawg was in Dr. Hoover's mind, it's talking about a specific time period. And so this book, we're only in chapter 12, continues this idea of this promise of a kingdom, of a city. Move to chapter 13 toward the end of the book. Chapter 13 and verse 12, and I'm skipping over. If you want a really good study, look for these concepts of promise and city and kingdom throughout the book of Hebrews. And you'll see a pattern. In chapter 13 and in verse 12, he says, therefore, talking about sacrifices in a tabernacle serving outside the camp, he says, therefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered outside the gate, Therefore, let us go forth to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. Now watch. Verse 14, for here we have no continuing city. Where's the camp? Where's the city that we're to go out of? The physical Jerusalem. He's talking about the physical. He says we're to move to the spiritual, ultimately. For we have here no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. Therefore, by him, let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, which we have done today. That is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name, which we did. But do not forget to do good and to share, for such sacrifices God is well pleased. Hebrews says we are looking for a city. We are resident aliens, sojourners. We are pilgrims. We seek a city to come. The typology is clear, it is consistent, and it is unequivocal. It's speaking of a time when man and God are together forever. Forever and forever and forever. I spoke recently with a man at work who was an atheist. Had to be careful because he was senior management. He wanted to know where I'd just come from. And I tried to explain to him, as I did, and I think Mr. Fish is right, I was wondering if my life was going to pass before me if I didn't explain it quite right. My tagline would be, Mr. Fish, by the way, we observe the holy days that Jesus did. Doesn't make me a Jew. Questions whether what kind of a Christian I am. But I think it says it all. But we also talked about this man as an atheist. We were talking about a number of subjects, and I said, well, it's for eternity. Everything is for eternity. He says, well, I don't believe there's a God. And I said, it doesn't matter whether you believe in God or not. Time keeps moving no matter what. Whether we live or not, time keeps moving. The future is the future. And since we've been talking, we talked in the past, we are now talking in the future, and time will move on. Eternity with God means eternity with God. The typology says that there is a temporary tabernacling, a temporary dwelling that we have now. And yet, ultimately, as the feast and typically the eighth day pictures, on the day after the tabernacles, we will be with God. Turn with me, if you would, to Revelation chapter 21. Because Hebrews is talking literally about this concept in Revelation chapter 21. This is at the very end of the book. It says, verse 1, now I, John, saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Listen to the picture he is trying to paint. How close did a city look like a bride? I don't know. I haven't got a clue. That's what he thought. And when we see it, may the Lord will, we'll say, wow, is that what he meant? Sounds pretty accurate. As a bride adorned for her husband, and I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things are gone. Nothing in the past exists. It is blotted out. The former things are passed away. And for eternity, man is with God and with Jesus Christ. No more sickness, no more disease, no more accidents, intended or not intended. No more. No more pain, no more suffering. There are many people who have pain and suffering, and it is constant. Mine will go away. May God be thanked. He was good to me, in spite of my stupidity. See, God even aids the stupid. There are people suffering. There are people suffering here. You were with people at the feast who had to save every dime far above their second tithe to get to the Feast of Tabernacles. Wherever they were, I will guarantee it to you. There were people who struggled to get there. people that came back to no job. It happens every feast. Every feast you've ever attended, all your life, there are people who came back to no job. And their sickness didn't go away at the feast. They still endure it. Life moves on. And yet this small period of time of 8 or 9 days, if you went early or stayed late, was this very peaceful envisioning of the future. The problem with the future is this isn't the future. This is the now. And sometimes the now sucks. It's not what we want. But when we see the word tabernacle, the Feast of Tabernacles, I kept looking at it, and I said, it means temporary, until that final tabernacle with God comes down. The Feast of Tabernacles is the Feast of Temporary. It's tents. Abraham dwelt in a tent that means tabernacle, as we start in the book of Hebrews chapter 8. It means temporary. Ain't gonna last. It's like a 65-year-old Coleman tent. It's full of holes. It leaks. It smells. It's temporary. How many of you have got a Coleman tent I just described? Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought Steve did. You should have seen his face. It's temporary. I think that's the biggest problem we have as human beings. This is temporary, folks. The clothes that you have on, if we live another 25, 30 years, well, I can't get another 25 years out of here. I'm not 30, but it's temporary. It's temporary. All that you see around you ain't going to be here 50 to 100 years from now. We think it will because we're in it. When you're 18, when you're 28, when you're even 40, it's always those of us that are much older, we always think what? You think you're going to last forever? Well, you're not. You think you're invincible? Well, you're not. You think you're not going to get hurt and have pain and suffer? Well, yeah, you will. Listen to experience. When you're younger, you think you're invincible. Everything is eternal. This will never change. I will always be able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, bend steel with my bare hands. And yet, for a small metropolitan newspaper, this will not last. I sure hope it doesn't last. Does anybody here hope that this world lasts like it is? Do you hope that the Feast of Tabernacles that you just experienced lasted forever? People in Ethiopia don't. People in Darfur don't. People in the ghettos around the world don't. People in this country who live on subsistence living, they don't. They want it to end. And I think God wants it to end. So all of this is temporary. And so this is the bad part that I get to, for me anyway, is why complain? Why do you complain about it? If you truly, truly believe this is not going to last, if you truly believe the book of Hebrews is true, and that we all seek as Abraham and Sarah, and all the patriarchs in the book of Hebrews seek a city, then why do we complain? You shouldn't complain. Abraham and Sarah knew life was full of ups and downs. Look at the lives they had. They waited and waited far longer than any human being I know to even have children. They waited. They had their family upend on them. Lot was a great relative, yeah? Look at all that they went through. Very little of what we even know about. And yet they believed God. They trusted God. They knew this was temporary and that they were in a temporary dwelling. And even what they had been promised by God, which was wonderful, Canaan, that too was temporary. There's an analogy there. I realize your job is bad. You hate your job. Your boss is probably someone who was a convict and got out from an insane asylum. Unfortunately, they're your boss. Things happen. Some of our biggest decisions at the Feast of Tabernacles, let's see, do I get the porterhouse or do I get the, right? Right? Yeah. We had some really tough choices at the feast. We lived in an ideal setting. Young people, I think, complain less than old people. You haven't got much to complain about, by the way, as far as we're concerned. You don't get up in the morning and everything hurts, right? And 15 minutes later, it hurts worse and you wish you hadn't gotten up. I complain a lot. I mean, a lot. I complain about complaining. Ask my wife. So Becky, one day, she said she'd had enough. She said, John, you get 5. It's a true story. People in Hawaii, they said, is this a true story? Every story I tell is true. Most of them. Few of them. This one is. This one's true. She said, I've had it. Right? You get 5 a day. After 5, no mas. No more. That's the good news. The bad news is I've hit 5 by about 8 in the morning. I asked for a reload. Becky said, no soup for you. No more. Every time I complain, I say to myself, why am I complaining about this? I'm not even going to remember it. That yo-yo in front of me on the freeway, I'll never see him again. May God be thanked, right? It's temporary, right? Why do I spend so much trouble yelling at this bozo? Sorry, this individual. But I think sometimes when we live in this physical life and we see others that are struggling, we are reminded, we pray, this is temporary. My God, thy kingdom come. Even so, come, Lord Jesus, as the book of Revelation ends. When we see the word tabernacle, it is metaphor. It means not eternal, not lasting. It means this tent, a bunch of these tents. I'm looking at a bunch of tents, a bunch of Coleman tents, right? Some of them are, oh, they all look beautiful. It's temporary. May God be thanked it's temporary. But I think in many ways, our faith deepens over time. In every Feast of Tabernacles, I'm reminded, it is not the millennium I want. In these verses, in this chapter says, it is not the millennium I want. I want the eighth day. I want the eighth day, which is obviously to us in the Church of God, it is the day, as we heard earlier, it is the day when everyone gets a shot. We're not really sure how, but we know that everybody deserves an opportunity. But even beyond that, the ninth day, the tenth day, the 11th millennia that we are with God, it is about being with God. The city descends. That's the goal of goals of goals. It is access to God and Jesus Christ. So I think we accept our faith in stages, not all at once. Hopefully our faith develops over time. It becomes stronger and stronger as we see more and more things happen around us and often to us and to those people that we love. We understand, we try and remember, this too will pass. Quickly. We ask for quickly. We realize that God may have designed it this way. He's designed it so that we would have struggles, but that we would remember and have faith that just as he has done so many times before, and each one of you, I know so many of you, I've known you all, many of you for so long, the struggles we've all had, and each and every time God has delivered us. Many of you thought you'd never be in this building on this day, at this time, in the good situation you're in, because it was sheer H-E double hockey sticks prior for a long time. So we're reminded that God possibly designed us this way. He gives us the whole plan. He tries to give us the future, but often we absorb the details slowly and we get mired in the present. And yet hopefully we learn that our life is relative. All things are relative in this life. Nothing is absolute, except maybe mathematics. Mathematics is fairly absolute. With God, all things are absolute. There's no, let me think about that with God. It's this or it's this. With us, it's kind of this and maybe kind of that and a couple things in between. It's all relative. And one day, I believe we will understand. But today is where we are. And I told you I was going to take you into the past, drag you into the future. Now I'm dragging you back to today. But we're going to leave you in the future. I hope. C.S. Lewis, in his book, Weight of Glory, speaks to this concept of going and not knowing and trying to envision the world beyond the resurrection, beyond the millennium, to the eighth day, the ninth day, and ever and ever and forever. In his book, The Weight of Glory, one of the sections is, it would seem that God finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. Let me read it again. It would seem that God finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday by the sea. We are far too easily pleased. We are so too often pleased with this. I think most of us enjoy or love our life. I love my life. I'm very blessed. I have very few complaints. Yeah, I do. Let me read them here. We're a very blessed people. I think most of us enjoy our life. That video said quite a few people in New Zealand sure enjoyed 8 days. But sometimes we think this is all there is. This is it. Ain't going to get any better than this. Ever. C.S. Lewis says, we are far too easily pleased. Should part of our brain, our heart, and with God's Spirit help us to envision the eighth day, the ninth day, the tenth day, for eternity and forever with God in a completely different environment, one we cannot imagine, but we can envision, we can think about it. Abraham did, Sarah did. It says the patriarchs of old knew that there was something ahead of them, far, far into the future, that was given to them, and that we should believe it. So these verses, as we conclude, they show us, though we are in this world, you can't get out of it, not physically, you can't. This world, as beautiful as where you may have been during the Feast of Tabernacles, and even if people stayed home, they were still in a tabernacle frame of mind. They knew when the Feast of Tabernacles was. Wherever you were, whatever situation you were in, it was the Feast of Tabernacles, and it's a beautiful, beautiful setting. It is temporary. It will not last. As Abraham did, we tabernacle here together. We are content, but we are not satisfied. We are not arrogant, but we are blessed. We have God's Spirit and his understanding of his laws and his ways. We understand in a great part, but not fully by any measure. But we can see the future. We have been told about the future. We practice the holy days, which is a vision of the future days for all the world. And we have access through Jesus Christ, which is what the other section of the book of Hebrews is about. Hebrews concentrates on specifically, in my opinion, humble opinion, two major holy days, Day of Atonement and the eighth day. The resurrection is talked about, Pentecost is referenced, all the holy days, in fact, are referenced. But two major themes are Christ as the high priest on the Day of Atonement, gaining access for all mankind forever to God in this life, but ultimate access to God on one day and one day only. It's realized for all humanity, the eighth day. And therefore, we do not have a selfish future, because it's not just going to be us, it will be all the world, a wonderful world without slums. Indeed, all of us are going, someone not knowing, but we believe and understand the beauty that God has given us. So, we tabernacle here together looking for a city. Hope you have and always will have a continuing wonderful Feast of Tabernacles.